let's just stop and take, if you go back to this reading in Mark chapter 2, let's just think about it for one moment there. I want you to imagine something really new and exciting is happening, right? There are people walking around talking about healing, talking about freedom, talking about restoration, and not only are they talking about it, but it's happening. People are being healed. People are becoming again a part of their families. People are again becoming a part of their communities. They're becoming contributors to their society. See, if you were unwell, that would leave you on the outer of your family or your community, and you would be provided for. But now with this healing, you would then be able to become a provider within your family system, within your community. How wonderful is that? And while this is all going on, how do people respond? They say, you're not eating on the right days. You're not following the rules properly. You're not doing it the way it's supposed to be done. What is that about us? That we would rather, when something new and good is happening, we would rather stick to what is old and bad. I'm genuinely asking, what is it about us that makes us choose? And I don't just say that, you know, something that is new and good should replace something that is old and bad. No, we're not talking about that. But what is that? Why do we fear that? Why do we fear it? Can someone give us some possible answers? Comfort. Yeah, we're comfortable with things that are bad sometimes.
We're afraid of change of any sort.
We're afraid of change of any sort.
You can be an expert in what's old. You can't be an expert in what's new and coming at you.
That's right. That's wisdom there. I reckon I've got a job for you. Power. Expand just quickly.
For those who want to keep the power they have.
Very good. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's that power. You know, people who have the power want to keep it, and people who don't want to take it. So they want to shut it down. There's this other thing, you know, where we touched on, which is fear, because it's and risk. Change is risky. Love is risky. You know, when you love, you take a risk. You know, love goes well beyond our feelings, doesn't it? You know, if your love ends when you start to feel bad about something, well, then it's not love. It's just a like. And we're currently trying to build a contemporary society on like and dislike. And that isn't going to last very long. You know, we view the world through those lenses, the lens of like and dislike. Another lens is good and bad. And these are lenses that aren't going to help change the world. In fact, any lenses are. They just help us think we control what we see and what we understand. And all of a sudden, if you put a Bible in someone's hand, they don't just call things good or bad. They call things good and evil. And that's not something you get from the Bible. That's actually something we think we've been taught we need to understand. So I just want to give you something, and it's not to give you another lens. It's in fact to take off your lenses and to move with reality, which life isn't about good and bad or like and dislike or good and evil. They're binary states. The rhythm of life is life and death. Life and death. Breathing in and breathing out. Waking and sleeping. Graham often says, you know, when we go to sleep, we submit to death and we wake up because life comes at us in the morning. That's where we need to get in touch with the rhythm of life, the rhythm of the universe, you know, good and bad, like and dislike, they're the beat, but life and death and rebirth, that's the rhythm. That's the rhythm we move into. Which is why I just want to touch a little bit about the rhythm of Sabbath, because the rhythm of Sabbath is about rest. You know, the impulse of a child and the impulse of an addict is to stay high, to stay up, to stay awake. I'm really glad that our scientists are finally discovering the benefits of sleep. Amen to that. I like sleep. I wish I could get it more often. And You know, they found that if you stay awake for too long, if you deny yourself the 8 or 9 hours that you're required, then that leads to something sticky plaque building up in your brain, which will inevitably lead to Alzheimer's. In fact, the two greatest exponents of not sleeping and just working hard from the last 3 or 4 decades were Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. Do you remember those two?
Yep.
Right? They weren't exactly known as joyous people. Right? And what inevitably happened to both of them? They both, pardon? Both, yeah, long-term Alzheimer's. And it wore them away. And you know, in that place, they narrowed the world down, actually. And the world became good and bad. And if they saw people, they would see them as problems. And they'd either want to fight them or forget about them. So we had, with those two, we had the war on drugs, the war on welfare, the war on poverty, you know, the Cold War. Everything was a battle, because in that place, when you don't take the time to rest, you become central. You need to fix every problem. Everything you see is a person to be fixed, an issue to be solved, and not a person to be met. And let's take the pressure off those two political leaders, because politics is a different game, but let's think about us. When we're not resting, we end up narrowing. We need to fix things, we need to manage things, we need to control our worlds. And actually the gift of a day off helps us recenter, which means take ourselves out of the center of the universe. And it's a healthy practice. I don't take a day off. I don't rest for me. I rest for others. And it usually happens when Lisa says, go and take a nap. You're being of no value to anyone in this situation, right? Go and eat something and go and sleep. Because we see that the longer we don't rest, the worse the quality of our interactions become, and the more controlling the quality of our interactions become. So let me just finish off quickly with give you a few tips on how to have a good day off. How about that for a sermon? All right? So I read a book. It's very long, so I'm just going to summarize it into about a minute for you. It's called Keeping the Sabbath Holy, Wholly. Don't read it. I'll tell you how it goes. It's on your day, take a day off for a start. You know, we had this practice that we've recently fallen out of by starting on Friday night and having a meal together and lighting some candles and saying a blessing over one another, which is really nice, and talking about our week. But here are the four tips, right? If you write notes, here you go, write these down. It's called ceasing, resting, embracing and feasting. All right, so on your day off, cease from what you normally do. If you normally get up at a certain time to go to the gym, don't. Right? Take a day off. I give you full permission to sleep in on your day off. Stop doing what you normally do. So one of the things I do is I don't open any social media on that day. Okay? Take a break from it. Take a technology Sabbath or something like that. Rest, you know. I'm a big proponent of nana naps. Nana naps are cool. Yeah. And just they renew you, they restore you. Embrace something. So if you read normally for work or for information, pick up a non-fiction book and just read for the enjoyment of reading. Or binge watch your favourite show. You know, this is something that is about embracing and then feasting. Go and eat something good on your day off.
Watch The Bold and the Beautiful, and that will help you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that just we're supposed to be about decreasing our anxiety, right? So, but if that's what you love, go and do it. You know, go pig out on something that you really enjoy.
A tip on going to sleep is turn the lights off, have a lamp on, read a book, or turn the lights off. Lights are a trigger for your brain. Okay, dim the lights, turn them off. Mm. One little lamp on.
Mm. And so just think about that. That's great, Kenny. And just rest. Because then when we rest, we'll recenter ourselves away from being the center of things. And we'll be able to see people. The end of this here is Jesus sees a man in the temple. And if you're too busy, if you've left no space, if I give you a page full of words without any spaces between them, it makes no sense, does it not? It's only by putting the spaces in between them that you can get some sense out of what you are presented with. And if you were in that old mode of having of busy and not resting and working, you would see someone and you would either say, look, there's someone in the temple who's got a withered hand, they're disabled, so how can I fix them? Or how can I avoid them? In that mode, you'll be right on that mode and you'll say, look, I can either, look at them and say, oh, you're probably not able to do the things you did because you've made some very bad decisions in your life. And we can put judgment on them. Or we can be nice. And let me tell you, there's a lot of people who are nice who haven't switched off who need to fix everyone. They said, we can fix him. You know, where we were, there was a food bank and people had been attending that food bank for 20 years, the same staff and the same visitors for 20 years. But at no point had anyone changed. In fact, that's the worst mode to be in, because when you are just feeding someone and not addressing or walking with them, you know, whose needs are being met there, really? The giver. The person who can't switch off. But what does Jesus do? He doesn't do either of those things. He doesn't judge the person. He doesn't feed them or try and fix them. But he actually invites a response. When you have a withered hand in the Bible, that's code for, that was how you were productive. That's how you're a contributing member of your society. If you couldn't work, you couldn't provide, you couldn't eat, you were in the way. Jesus actually says, reach out your hand. Make a move. Make a move, because there was that space there. If we have space in our hearts, then we're not going to be driven towards or away from people. We're going to be given the space to be able to see them for who they are. And that's really important. It's really key. Because then there'll no longer be a problem to be solved. There'll no longer be an unworthy person who's in your way. But there'll be a person to be met. And you will see them and you will see their gifts. And sometimes the most holy thing you can offer someone is to say, I see the spark of life that is within you. And that's what I talk about. Let's think about life through the rhythms of life and death. We can always be asking the question, what encourages life here? And we can invite that from people and say, I don't know if you can see what I see, but what I see is amazing. And that's where love comes into it. And that's where the risk comes into it. Because that love, if it's real love, will take a risk. Because that risk is that we'll be hurt. That we will grieve if someone can't see. And so often we can see the beauty in people that they can't see in themselves. But we can invite that forward. And that's where the pain is too. We invite, yet we stay sometimes at the dance alone. But that's the kind of version of love we all sign up for, right? Anything less isn't love. It's that cheap version of like and dislike. Real love, the one we have an example for, the one that celebrates life, the one that passes through death and into new life, is available through the example of Jesus, that invites us forward, that invites you forward to move your feet towards life.